Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today we're getting into something really fascinating and I think quite rigorous. It's the therapeutic use of nature. But we're moving way beyond just, you know, the idea of going for a walk. We're analyzing a really structured clinical approach. It's known as adventure and nature therapy, and it's all formalized under this framework called ENBI. That's experiential and nature-based interventions. Our sources get into some amazing detail on this, and our mission today is to show you how these structured, sometimes challenging outdoor activities are actually mapped onto major global health classifications. You might be surprised to see how a wilderness experience can connect directly to the clinical world of, say, the ICD-11 or the DSM-5.
It's a truly integrative framework, and the definition is so key here. Adventure and nature therapy is a holistic experiential method that intentionally uses these adventure and nature settings to, well, to facilitate change. It can be its own specific therapy, or it can be a really effective complementary method. And the main target is building this deep, long-lasting psychological resilience.
Okay, let's unpack that framework, because you're right. The sources are very clear that not all time spent outdoors is, you know, professional therapy. That distinction feels foundational.
It is. The foundational difference is really about intent and structure.
Mm.
We have to separate what we call nature-based interventions, or NBI, from the wider spectrum of ENBI.
NBI, so what's that exactly?
NBI is focused on systematically fostering that connection with nature.
Mm.
Think mindful walking, therapeutic gardening, things like that.
Right.
But ENBI, experiential and nature-based interventions, that's the expanded, more rigorous version. It intentionally integrates these robust experiential dimensions to really deepen the therapeutic impact.
Experiential. That word feels like the absolute hinge for this whole thing. And the sources point out a nuance we have to clarify. They distinguish between experience-based and experiential-based.
Yes.
And I think this is where it gets really interesting for anyone trying to get the professional difference.
It is the professional nuance. So experience-based means you're reflecting on something that's already happened, a past event, a conflict, a trauma.
So pre-existing material.
Exactly. The client brings the material and you process it. But experiential-based, which is what ENBI uses, is totally different. It's about actively generating a new experience right there in the moment.
Generating it. How?
The therapist structures a task. It could be navigating a difficult trail, building a shelter, a cooperative challenge, something that creates a novel action.
Yeah.
And that action drives a real-time, you know, effective cognitive and physical response.
So it's not just sitting by a lake thinking about my problems. It's being tasked right now with building something that requires teamwork in the middle of the woods. And that creates a new data point about myself.
Precisely. That intentional action is the catalyst. It's what initiates the shift. You have the action, the physical engagement, the embodied perception, and then the reflection on it. And the goal across the board is to activate these deep self-healing and regulatory processes. The client sees themselves succeed, and that strengthens motivation, self-efficacy, and agency.
That success in the moment creates the belief. Okay, let's move to the mechanism itself. How does this actually create change? The sources keep linking two internal processes, the embodied and the reflective.
They are the dynamic duo. Embodied processes are, well, they're about experiencing and understanding the world through the body.
Through the body.
Often before the conscious mind even has a name for it. This is everything from sensory input, the smell of pine, the feeling of cold mud, to your internal systems like proprioception.
Proprioception. That's your body's sense of where it is in space.
Exactly. It's subconscious. When you walk across a slippery log, your body's making hundreds of micro adjustments to keep you balanced. That's your body regulating itself through physical involvement. ENBI uses the dynamic environment of nature to tap into and enhance that implicit self-regulation.
So if I'm climbing a difficult rock face, the embodied process is that immediate non-conscious fear, but also the physical regulation that kicks in. My muscles tighten, my balance shifts.
That's the embodied piece. And then you have the reflective processes.
The conscious part.
Yes, the conscious layer. The meaning-making. Once you're safe, you reflect cognitively. What strategy did I use emotionally? Wow. I felt fear, but I stayed focused.
Mm.
And then you integrate it. I successfully managed my fear and my body under pressure.
That integration is so powerful. It reminds me of that line from the source material. Your body remembers what your mind forgets. By linking the two, the body creates the experience and the reflection unlocks the lesson.
And that's how the change gets anchored. The implicit learning, the body succeeding under stress, is registered on a really deep level. The conscious reflection then locks it into your personal story.
So what does this all mean when we get to the formal health system? If this is all about functional action and embodiment, How does it talk to clinical classifications like the DSM or ICD?
This is where the ICF becomes absolutely central. That's the International Classification of Functioning, Disability, and Health. It's the WHO's model.
Okay.
To simplify the relationship, think of it this way. The DSM-5 and ICD-11 are diagnostic. They tell us what someone has.
A diagnosis, like major depressive disorder.
Right. If the client is a car, the DSM tells us the engine is seized.
And the ICF.
The ICF describes how someone lives. It looks at function, activity, participation.
So what the seized engine means for the car's life.
Precisely. The ICF tells us the car can't drive to work, which is about daily routines. It can't handle hills, which is about handling demands. It isolates the owner, which is social participation.
That clarifies it perfectly. So ENBI isn't trying to replace a diagnosis. It's using the ICF map to rebuild the person's ability to function.
Exactly. ENBI is not a diagnostic system. It complements other treatments by strengthening those functional abilities, the ICF domains, that are impaired by the condition. So whether it's depression, anxiety, trauma, ADHS, the key is ENBI is not symptom-focused. It is function-oriented. It's about promoting regulation and building resources.
Let's use some specific clinical examples from the sources. So for depressive disorders, the ICD-11 code is 6A0. The functional problem is often, you know, no motivation, can't keep a routine.
Right. And in that case, ENBI would support activation and self-efficacy. Instead of just talking about the lack of routine, the intervention is a routine. You have to show up to tend a garden plot or complete a trail segment that directly addresses the impaired ability to carry out daily routines, which is D230 in the ICF.
And it gives them a tangible success.
An immediate one.
What about for trauma-related disorders, where the challenge is chronic hyperarousal, feeling unsafe in your own body?
Here, the approach has to be highly specialized. The focus is on stabilization, grounding, resource building, creating a secure body experience in nature. And the source is very explicit here. Absolutely no trauma exposition. You are not reliving the trauma.
So what's the activity?
It might be a very slow, intentional movement task, something focused entirely on sensory input and balance. The goal is just to practice regulating your system and feeling safe in your body. You're building resources, not re-triggering.
That's a critical distinction. And one more, what about for something like ADHS or impulsivity disorders, where the problem is focus and motor control?
Well, ENBI provides a setting that demands movement, but within clear, non-negotiable structures. An activity like navigating a precise route or tying a complex knot. It requires focused attention and controlled movements. The environment itself helps with sensory regulation.
This all sounds incredibly specialized. Which brings us to professionalization. Where is this actually happening? And what really separates a professional nature therapist from, say, a great outdoor guide?
It's happening in serious clinical settings. We're talking rehabilitation clinics, psychiatric hospitals, child and youth welfare facilities. And the distinction comes down to three things: therapeutic expertise, the therapeutic context, and the depth of the process.
So it's not just about being good with a map and compass.
Not at all. Yeah. A therapist has to apply robust theoretical knowledge, including clinical models like the ICF, to make sure the action leads to real, clinically relevant change. It's one tool in a whole treatment plan.
And the sources mention some really broad applications.
They do. We see fascinating examples like programs for violence relapse prevention in prisons that use therapeutic archery.
Archery? Why archery?
Think about it. It demands immense focus, sustained attention, motor control. It forces you to physically practice delaying gratification and regulating yourself.
Which directly counters the impulsivity that can lead to violence.
It's a perfect example of embodied regulation. Then you have programs for severe mental illness or for youth at risk, like the Obrando Via program, which uses climbing.
Climbing seems like a masterclass in trust and facing fear.
It is. It's a managed risk setting that allows people to confront overwhelming challenges safely, which builds self-efficacy. For at-risk youth, it forces them into situations where they have to communicate clearly and rely on others. That's directly building functional skills in social interaction. The activity provides real-time proof that they can overcome what they thought were their limits.
It's clear this is a global field with highly trained specialists. The sources mention people like Alexander Rose, a clinical psychologist working in addiction recovery, and Christian Thiessen, a social worker specializing in trauma.
Absolutely. That level of professional background is what ensures the unique power of nature and action is harnessed within, you know, rigorous clinical standards. The activities are just the medium.
So as we wrap up this deep dive, let's bring it back to the core insight for everyone listening.
I think the core insight is that adventure and nature therapy, through this ENBI framework, offers an intentional path to healing. It deliberately shifts the focus. It moves away from just diagnosing symptoms, the DSM-CD model, to actively strengthening how people function in their daily lives, using the ICF as its map. It leverages intentional action and embodiment in nature to unlock our own self-healing and regulatory capacities.
That focus on regulation is key. We know from broader research that just being in nature can reduce depression and anxiety by activating the parasympathetic nervous system, our relaxation response. But considering EMBI's explicit integration of these embodied processes, the intentional movement, the structured challenge, I'm left wondering, how might this professionally structured physical action offer a measurable, maybe even an accelerated pathway to those mental health benefits? Could intentionally engaging your body in this way bypass the slow ramp up of standard relaxation and offer a quicker, more durable route to nervous system regulation? That's something to mull over.